Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back, everyone, to the Deep Dive. We're here to break down big ideas from important books and make them, well, usable for you. Today, we're tackling a really influential one in the investing world, Peter Lynch's One Up on Wall Street.
Yeah, this is a fantastic book, especially if you find the whole Wall Street thing a bit intimidating or maybe even rigged against the little guy.
Exactly. And Lynch's main point is kind of revolutionary, isn't it?
Totally. He basically argues that you, the average person, actually have some serious advantages over the big shot professional fund managers.
Advantages when it comes to picking winning stocks, specifically.
Right. It's all about successful stock picking, consistently.
Okay, that sounds almost too good to be true. So our mission today is to unpack that. We want to pull out Lynch's actual strategies, the mindset shifts he talks about.
Yeah, how can you use what you already know just from living your life to, you know, become a better investor?
We want to give you those tools, cut through the jargon, and hopefully show that successful investing isn't some exclusive club.
Definitely. So let's start with the man himself, Peter Lynch.
Right.
We need to talk about why anyone should listen to him in the first place. His credibility is, well, immense.
Right. This isn't just some guy with theories. He actually did it. He ran the Fidelity Magellan Fund. When was that, 77 to 90?
That's right. 1977 to 1990. 13 years.
And the results were just stack.
Oh, yeah.
He took that fund from, what, $20 million? Which sounds like a lot, but in fund terms.
Relatively small back then.
Tiny. And he grew it to $14 billion.
Billion with a B. That kind of growth over that long period. It's incredible.
And the performance numbers are legendary. An average annual return of 29.2%.
Wow. Just to put that in perspective.
Well, it more than doubled what the overall market, the S&P 500, did during that same time. Just phenomenal outperformance.
So what made him different? He wasn't just another Wall Street guy, was he?
Not entirely. I mean, he had the credentials, the Wharton MBA, all that.
Standard stuff. The standard stuff. But he combined that with this very grounded Main Street approach. It wasn't all complex models and algorithms.
See, more common sense.
A lot of it, yes. Careful observation, paying attention to the world around you, and this core idea, invest in what you know.
We hear that phrase a lot. What does it really mean in his context?
It means using your own experience as a consumer, as a professional, whatever, to spot good companies before they become Wall Street darlings. His success felt, I don't know, achievable, observable.
Okay, so that sets the stage. Let's dive into the book itself, One Up on Wall Street. What's the central message he's trying to get across?
The big thing is empowerment. He really wants to flip the script on how individual investors see themselves.
Instead of feeling like an outsider.
Exactly. Stop thinking you're on the outside looking in, trying to guess what the pros know. Recognize that you're actually an insider in many ways. You have unique knowledge.
And that unique knowledge is the amateur's edge.
That's the term he uses, yeah. The amateur's edge. Think about it. The big professional funds, they have limitations.
Like what?
Well, their sheer size is one. If you're managing billions, buying a small stake in a promising little company doesn't really move the needle for you.
So they have to focus on the big, well-known stocks.
Right. Plus, regulations, sometimes a herd mentality. Mm. They often miss out on the smaller, high-growth opportunities. But you, as an individual, you can be nimble.
You get in early.
You can get in early before the institutions pile in. And you can use that firsthand experience. You know, noticing that a certain store is always busy or a new restaurant chain seems to be popping up everywhere and people love it.
Or maybe something in your own job, a new software everyone's adopting.
Perfect example. That's real world intelligence that an analyst stuck in an office tower might miss for months.
So the focus shouldn't be on trying to predict the whole economy.
No, Lynch thought that was mostly a fool's errand for individuals. Predicting interest rates, recessions, the big picture stuff, he called that the top-down approach.
And he preferred
the bottom-up approach. Focus on finding great individual companies. Ones with solid financials, understandable businesses, and clear paths for growth. Forget the macro stuff. Find good businesses.
Okay, that makes sense. So we buy into this idea that we have an edge. How do we actually use it? Let's get into his method, the toolkit, starting with the mindset piece.
Right. So first, he really drills down on those institutional disadvantages we mentioned. Because the pros have to ignore smaller companies, that's where the potential 10-baggers often are.
10-baggers, his famous term for stocks that go up tenfold.
Exactly. And those are often found in areas that might seem, well, boring or out of favor, places the big funds aren't looking, that lack of attention can mean the stock is undervalued.
So you're saying the amateur's playing field is actually bigger in some ways?
In terms of finding those huge winners, potentially yes. It's about being comfortable looking where others aren't.
But before we even start looking, Lynch has a warning, right, about financial stability?
Oh, absolutely crucial. Financial prudence. He's very clear. Only invest money you can genuinely afford to lose.
This isn't gambling money.
No. You need your financial house in order first. Pay off high interest debt, have an emergency fund, investing comes after that foundation is solid. Don't invest your rent money.
Sound advice. Okay, foundation built. Now, how do we analyze stocks? He has these categories.
Yes, the six categories. This is fundamental to his approach. You have to know what kind of company you're looking at before you can evaluate it properly.
Why is that so important?
Because your expectations should be totally different. How fast should it grow? How risky is it? When should you maybe sell? It all depends on the category.
Okay, let's quickly run through them. What are the main types?
All right, first you've got the fast growers. These are the exciting ones. Maybe growing earnings 20, 25% a year. This is prime 10-bagger territory.
But also risky, I imagine.
Very risky. High volatility, high potential reward, but high risk. Then you have the stalwarts.
Like big established companies.
Exactly. Think Coca-Cola, Procter & Gamble maybe. Reliable, growing maybe 10, 12% a year. They provide stability in your portfolio. Less thrilling, but solid.
Got it. What's next?
Cyclicals. These are companies tied to the economic cycle. Airlines, car manufacturers, steel companies.
Their profits go up and down with the economy.
Precisely. And the tricky part here is timing. Buying a cyclical at the top of an economic boom can be disastrous. You need to understand where we are in the cycle.
Sounds difficult for an amateur.
It can be. He acknowledges that. Then there are the slow growers, often large mature companies, maybe like utility companies.
Not much growth, but maybe they pay dividends.
Usually, yeah. They grow roughly in line with the overall economy. You buy them for the dividend income, mostly, not for big price jumps.
Okay, two more.
Turnarounds. These are companies that have been through the ringer, really beaten down, but are showing signs of life. Maybe new management, cost cutting.
Like Chrysler back in the day.
Classic example. High risk, high reward if the turnaround actually works. Success depends on the company fixing itself, not the overall economy.
And the last one.
Asset plays. These are companies where the value of their underlying assets, maybe real estate, cash reserves, patents, brand names, is actually worth more than the stock price suggests.
So you're betting the market will eventually realize the hidden value.
Essentially, yes. So knowing which bucket a stock fits into is step one. It shapes your entire analysis and your expectations.
Okay, framework established. Now, finding the winners within those categories, Lynch had some interesting ideas about what makes a perfect stock, didn't he? Kind of counterintuitive.
He did. He loved companies that seemed, on the surface, really dull. Boring names, boring industries.
Why boring?
Because nobody else is paying attention. If it's not glamorous, it's less likely to be hyped up and overanalyzed by Wall Street. Low institutional ownership is often a good sign for him.
So less competition means potentially a better price.
Exactly. He also liked companies involved in something slightly unpleasant, or maybe there are rumors of problems like a turnaround candidate. Again, things that scare off the mainstream.
Interesting. What about stocks to avoid?
Definitely avoid the hottest stock in the hottest industry. By the time everyone's talking about it, the price is probably already sky high, reflecting all the good news.
The easy money's been made.
Probably. And he also coined that brilliant term, diversification.
Diversification. I like that. What is it?
It's when a company starts diversifying into businesses it knows nothing about. You know, a successful donut chain buying a struggling tech company.
Doesn't make much sense.
Usually not. It often signals that management is running out of good ideas in their core business or just getting distracted. That complexity often hides problems. Stick to what they know.
Right. So let's say you find a potentially interesting company. Maybe it's a bit boring. Maybe you noticed it doing well locally. What's next?
Research. Right. Absolutely. That initial observation, what he called scuttlebutt, just gathering information on the ground, is only the start. We have to back it up with the numbers.
Do the homework.
And he had this great test, the two-minute drill.
Explain that.
You should be able to explain why you own a particular stock, what the company does, how it makes money, why you think it will grow in simple terms in under 2 minutes.
Like an elevator pitch for your investment.
Pretty much. If you can't do that clearly, you probably don't understand it well enough and shouldn't own it.
And when looking at the financials, he didn't advocate getting lost in complex accounting, did he?
No, he emphasized simplicity, focus on key, understandable metrics, things like the PE ratio.
Price to earnings, how expensive the stock is relative to its profits.
Right. And things like the debt to equity ratio,
Yeah.
how much debt the company has compared to its own capital. You want low debt generally, shows financial strength.
So focus on the basics, earnings growth, sales growth, debt levels.
Exactly. Don't get bogged down in overly complicated analysis. Understand the core financial health.
Okay, and maybe the hardest part for many people,
Huh.
selling. When does Lynch say to sell a stock? It's not just because the price went up, is it?
Definitely not. That's a common mistake. He says sell only when the fundamental reason you bought the stock changes, the story
I
deteriorates.
mean, the business itself is weakening.
Yes. Or if the stock becomes wildly overvalued, way beyond what the fundamentals justify, or if you find a significantly better investment opportunity elsewhere.
But not just because you made a 50% profit.
No. Because if the story is still good, the company is still growing, selling it just because the price went up means you might be cutting off a potential 10-bagger way too early. Let your winners run as long as the reason you bought them still holds true.
That requires discipline. Which brings us nicely to the key themes that run through the book. What are the big takeaways?
Well, the absolute core is invest in what you know. Use your unique perspective as a consumer, employee, or hobbyist. That firsthand knowledge gives you insights the spreadsheets don't show.
Like Lynch noticing how popular Lake's pantyhose were becoming just by seeing them everywhere.
Exactly. Or noticing the limited stores were always packed. Real-world observation is powerful.
Okay, theme one, use your edge. What's next?
Theme two. Simple business models trump complexity. Avoid those diversification situations. Look for businesses you can actually understand.
Businesses with a clear way of making money.
Right. And ideally, ones with a durable competitive advantage, what Warren Buffett calls a moat that protects them from competitors. Simple, strong businesses.
Makes sense. Theme three.
Research and due diligence are non-negotiable. Your common sense observation is just the start. You must verify it with the financial facts.
So the scuttlebutt needs to match the balance sheet.
Perfectly put. Otherwise, it's just an anecdote, not an investment thesis.
And the final theme sounds like the toughest one.
It often is. Theme four, emotional discipline determines success. Lynch argued that controlling your own psychology, fear when the market tanks, greed when it soars, is often harder than the analysis itself.
You need the stomach for it.
You need the stomach, not just the brain, as he put it. Staying rational during turbulence is key.
Those themes really capture his philosophy. Let's touch on some specific quotes that really drive these points home. They're quite memorable.
Yeah, he had some great lines. How about this one? Go for a business that any idiot can run, because sooner or later, any idiot probably is going to run it.
What's the deeper meaning there? Focus on the business quality itself.
Exactly. It's about the durability of the business model, the strength of its brand or competitive position. It shouldn't rely solely on one genius CEO because leadership changes. You want a business that can survive even mediocre management for a while.
Okay, good one. Another.
This one relates to the research theme. The person that turns over the most rocks wins the game.
Meaning you have to look at a lot of companies to find the gems.
Precisely. It's a numbers game. Success comes from diligent investigation. Don't expect your first idea to be a 10-bagger. Keep digging.
And how about the one related to the 2-minute drill?
If you can't explain why you own a stock in 2 minutes, you don't belong in it.
Straight to the point. Clarity is key.
Absolutely. It forces you to have a clear, simple thesis. If you're rambling, your reasoning is probably weak, maybe based on hype or a hot tip, not solid understanding.
These quotes really encapsulate his practical approach. So let's bring this into today. How can listeners apply these ideas in the real world right now? Does this stuff still work?
I absolutely think it does, maybe even more so, because there's so much noise now. The first step is consciously developing that investment eye.
Actively looking around.
Yes, systematically observe your daily life. When you encounter a great new product, a super efficient service, a restaurant that's always buzzing, ask the question, is this company public? Can I invest in this?
Start building a watch list based on your own experience.
Exactly. Then you can use his six categories for portfolio structuring. Think about your own goals and risk tolerance.
So maybe if you're younger and can handle more risk, you might lean more towards fast growers and turnarounds.
Right. Balance perhaps with some stalwarts for stability. If you're closer to retirement, maybe more stalwarts and slow growers for income. Tailor the categories to your needs.
And what about handling market volatility, that emotional discipline part?
That's about building resilience. Lynch saw market corrections when prices dropped sharply, not as disasters, but as opportunities.
Buying opportunities.
Yes. If you've done your homework and the company's fundamental story hasn't changed, a market panic is a chance to buy shares of great businesses on sale. But that takes guts, the stomach, not the brain. Don't panic sell good companies just because the market is scared.
That's a powerful reframing. So, reflecting on this whole deep dive, what's the biggest paradigm shift Lynch offers?
For me, it's simply the empowerment, the idea that you, the individual, aren't inherently disadvantaged. You actually have unique insights because you're not trapped in the Wall Street bubble. You just need a method to harness that insight.
You have the raw material. You just need the framework.
You got it.
So let's leave our listeners with a final thought, something provocative based on Lynch's ideas.
Okay. Lynch constantly pushed investors to think like a business owner, not a stock renter. You're not just renting a stock certificate, hoping the price goes up tomorrow. You're buying a piece of an actual business.
Focusing on the long-term health of the company.
Exactly. So the question for you, the listener, is how can you start applying that mindset shift today? How can you focus more on the underlying business, its management, its products, its competitive position, and less on the daily distracting noise of the stock price ticker?
Think like an owner, not a gambler. That's a great place to end. A really practical philosophy.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acotra Foundation.